good to see everybody here. I just want to kind of reiterate what Tracy says. Our staff is here to help you, to help you do your jobs and be better at it. And so whatever you need, just get with our public relations staff, and they will try to accommodate your needs. It is a pleasure to be out here in Seattle. We're off and running, as we are this time of the convention. We've had our first general session, and now we're here at the opening news conference. I'm not going to talk a whole lot. I'd rather just answer your questions. Our delegate session this year, some of you are always want to know what we're going to be talking about. My answer is still the same. You never know with our delegates, but we've had some internal discussions about dairy policy, about fiscal policy, some more about climate change, and a number of other things. So I suspect it's going to be a very interesting session. Things in agriculture in general, you know, we've gone through a tough year in 2009, and when I talk to farmers, we're hoping for a better year in 2010, and that most of that relates to the weather, and so we'll see. We're obviously going through an awful cold period of time, and that's affecting livestock particularly, and then crops in some of the southern parts of the country, so we'll have to see how that plays out. But it's like I tell people, when you take up the profession of agriculture, you take up the weather that goes with it. So thanks for being here, and I'll be glad to – thanks for joining us both today and also whatever time you're going to be spending with us for the whole annual meeting here. And with that, I'll take some questions. Jeff. Well, I think that that's true, that, you know, agriculture, farmers and ranchers, we have been under attack from a variety of interests, from a number of segments within our society, and I would say not mainstream society. When you look at surveys, it still shows that the American people think very highly of America's farmers and ranchers. There's a couple of ways of engagement. We always try to have an objective engagement, fact-based, have some discussion, but for those who aren't willing to do that, I was sort of trying to put them on notice in my annual address that, you know, we will draw a line in the sand and we will push back. And I think that's where we are, given a lot of the frustrations that I sense from our membership.
USDA will be speaking to your members. Is it a missed situation when you don't have the administration voice addressing your members at this convention as you've had in the past several years?
Well, there are special circumstances this year. Secretary Vilsack called me over the holidays. We had a good cell phone conversation. We obviously always invite the Secretary of Agriculture to come join us at our general session. That is Farm Bureau tradition. It doesn't matter what administration is in. And we had invited Secretary Vilsack, and we got word from his staff that he was not going to be able to be here. And then we got further clarification that he was going to be on duty, if you will, under the orders of his boss, the President of the United States. Well, in the conversation that he and I had over Christmas, he explained to me that he was going to be in Afghanistan. You probably are aware that USDA is putting a fairly large number of individuals into the field in Afghanistan to try to help them do something with their agriculture, to kind of do the development that it's going to take to hopefully turn that country around a little bit. And I certainly commend USDA for those efforts. I think it's very important. Agriculture is the root of most societies, and particularly where you get into a country like that where there's a lot of poverty, not a lot of opportunity for income in rural areas, other than growing poppies, which is the one thing we probably don't want them to grow. It makes sense to try to do something. The Secretary told me that he regretted he wasn't going to be able to be here, that if he had not been in Afghanistan or didn't have to go to Afghanistan, that he certainly would have been here. He and I had some more conversation. We will get him probably with our Council of Presidents, with all of our 50-state presidents in July in Washington when we're there. He also said that he and I could have a conversation about the details of his trip, and he would kind of brief me on what was going on over there with their agricultural efforts. So, you know, this is unusual circumstances. Traditionally, we get the U.S. Secretary of Agriculture to come speak with us, but, you know, under the circumstances, if the President says go somewhere, you go somewhere. That's the way it works. Jerry.
In the last few weeks, the administration has released the regulations for the SURE disaster program and the final regulations on basically on payment limitations. What is your reaction to the way those regulations have been finalized?
Well, on the SURE program, our concern all along has been the amount of funding that ultimately will be there. I mean, I think it remains to be seen how much in the way of resources will actually be available to individual producers once they apply. I don't have any real comment on the details of the SURE rule. I don't know that anything there presented a red flag to us. It's obviously, very difficult to get everything up and running to put in place disaster programs, and this is another case of that. The rule on entities and payment limitations. Once again, that rule has just come out, but it looks like it will simplify things for the smaller producers. There is a caveat, I think, that the administration is going to continue to look at that issue, so I think we will have to continue to, make the case that is supported by our policy that, that we should, not be unduly restricting farmers from payments based on, whatever size they have or whatever form of operation they have. So we'll probably have to see how that one plays out to see if we have to make any further changes, as it is implemented.
Bob, what is your sense of how much discussion will come about at this meeting among your delegates about the 2012 Farm Bill? Chairman Peterson, of course, has indicated his intent to begin hearings on that bill. Senator Lincoln's less certain of what her agenda is going to be. What do you anticipate happening here with regard to that?
Well, we're with respect to the 2012 Farm Bill, we're kind of just finishing up, not quite finished up, with the implementation of the last Farm Bill. We're kind of midstream, if you will. Chairman Peterson did talk to me before the first of the year that about his desire to hold hearings and begin that discussion process. And, he characterized it to me as, we need to get started early to, have enough time to really discuss everything that will be necessary in a 2012 Farm Bill. I told him that we will be engaged in that discussion whenever the opportunity arises. So we'll see how that plays out. We will certainly participate in that process if it starts. As you indicated, Senator Lincoln has a lot more things on her plate and has probably indicated much less of a desire to start that process in 2010. But we'll see how it comes out. I do not believe that within this delegate body that we will have some huge discussion about new direction on farm programs in the Farm Bill in this session this year. We're focused on some other things. There will be some discussion, pretty sure, on dairy policy. That seems to be kind of front and center. But the rest of the farm program issues, I think, will probably wait for a real debate later on in our process.
Mr. President, Ken Rogers, KRVN Radio. Last week, that group of scientists came out and said that maybe you're dispelling some wrong information when it comes to climate change, cap and trade. They want to meet with you. Are you going to meet with them?
Well, first off, I was flying in an airplane when the press release came out. So until Friday, I wasn't even aware that they were requesting a meeting. And it's kind of curious. Most of the time when another group wants to sit down and talk with us, and it happens on a regular basis, both those who agree with us and those who don't agree with us, they call me up and say, hey, can we get together and have a meeting? They don't put out a press release. It's pretty much of a media stunt. When I actually have time to sit down and read the letter, which I haven't yet, I've been engaged here at this meeting, we'll come up with some response to them. I'm not sure what that will be. I they've been around. The Union of Concerned Scientists, Union of Concerned Scientists have been around, I think, since in the 60s. We're familiar with them. They're an activist group. They're not a scientific body. They're an activist group promoting a philosophical agenda. And I understand they're criticizing us for not understanding what mainstream science is, but when you look at their website and the issues, whether it's biotechnology, nuclear energy, antibiotics used for animals, and I'm trying to think what else is on there, they sort of seem to ignore mainstream science too. So, this is a media stunt by an activist group that's promoting a certain agenda, and that's not the first time that's happened and won't be the last, but we'll give them some kind of response when I get time to read the letter.
Steve Brown with Capital Press. Your recent seems like science is getting polarized. Is there any middle ground, anything we can grab onto concerning global warming particularly, that makes sense for both sides?
Well, this is going to be a general comment about this debate about whose science is right on a lot of issues. This is not just climate change. The scientific method involves, pondering something, proposing a question, hypothesizing about what the outcome will be, testing if your hypothesis is right, and then you go back through that loop over and over again. No place in the scientific method is there is a rule about getting consensus. Albert Einstein, who I suspect most would consider was an eminent scientist, made the comment once when people were trying to assuage his concerns about his theory of relativity that, well, there's so many hundreds that agree with you. And his comment was, but it only takes one to prove me wrong. He understood. And so a lot of this debate, if you will, on the issue of science around a lot of these public policy issues, I think people lose sight of that fact that, science is a continuing process. And you make decisions with the best facts you have. And with climate change, this is me talking. I've been involved with the weather as a farmer all my life. Show me a climate model that can predict, say, this big cold snap or whether we're going to have multiple major hurricanes in a given year, much less what happens 50 to 100 years from now, and then maybe we have something to talk about.
Cindy Zimmerman with ZimCom. Now, you've talked about, you said here that you want to draw a line in the sand. Your speech this morning was talking about really getting a little bit tougher, not being Mr. Nice Guy anymore, talking about agriculture in general. Do you have some specifics about how agriculture can really be tougher and not just be the nice guys and say, but look at us, we're so nice, we're such good people, and be tougher on these issues, climate change and others?
Well, I think it's a matter in terms of how we position ourselves. We want to continue to work with those who truly want to have a dialogue, who truly want to understand agriculture, and we listen. We listen all the time. We'll continue to do that. That's not going to be confrontational. What we object to is, say, some of the animal rights activists trying to play nice with us, with agriculture, if you will, and say, well, if you just do this or do that, we'll go away for a little while. They don't tell you that. And then come back, and then they flip right around. And if you, aren't willing to do whatever they want to, then they go on the attack. That's one example. This issue of climate change is probably another good one. There's a lot of happy talk out there about, saving the world and, this has to be done. And, if the earth is going to survive and, I'm not even going to begin to go through all the details of the science or past history or anything else, but you get a lot of people attacking agriculture, us particularly, because we aren't going to support a specific piece of legislation, which, by the way, doesn't do anything under the science, so-called science that exists around climate change to change the Earth's temperature. Lisa Jackson, Administrator Jackson, acknowledged that under testimony. USDA testified that it would could decrease crop production up to 59 million acres. When we look, we're going to look at the specifics of a piece of legislation. But we're not going to be bowled over by, somebody's happy talk about what this is going to mean for the future of the world without looking at the details. And on the other hand, those who criticize us for taking that position, we're just going to say, go right back and say, 59 million acres less food in this country and for this world, is that a good idea? No, it is not. And that's why we're going to oppose it. I don't know how to describe it. We're just going to be a little tougher and a little more direct, perhaps. But those who think that they're just going to roll over agriculture, that we're just sitting here waiting, for someone to tell us how to conduct our business, people who don't know anything about our business, we're just not going to lie down and accept it. I guess that was really my main point.
Bob, sorry.
Yeah, well, go ahead, Jeff.
The Waxman-Markey bill would have prevented agriculture lending from that second layer of regulation through other means, through the banking committee. In the Senate, that language is not done yet. What hope or what fear is there for another layer of regulatory reform for ag lending?
Well, our concern at the end of the day is, do farmers and ranchers have adequate access to capital, adequate access to credit? you know, when we went into this financial crisis, the banking, the rural banking system, those who, and a lot of those who primarily loaned to agriculture, that system was in pretty good shape. We weren't the cause of the problem, obviously. However, the overall implications of what has happened and what has happened in credit markets, it kind of trickles down, and now there are tighter restrictions on what banks can do. There's more oversight. And I don't know the legislation itself in terms of the details of who you know will have to be different in how they loan different rules for agricultural lending or commodities markets. The real issue I think is in commodities markets if you're talking about financial regulation. You know what, there's this idea that the commodities markets and the speculators caused all kind of problems, but without speculation you don't have a commodity market, and so the jurisdiction of that is an issue. If that is the area that you're kind of talking to, I think the biggest threat we face is to somehow remove those jurisdictions from where they are in the ag committees and fold them into some kind of super oversight that has people dealing in agricultural commodity markets who don't know anything about haven't had a lot of experience in agricultural commodity markets. Well, let's start with a couple issues. Trade. Let me just start with trade in terms of what this administration has done in the Doha negotiations. I think Ambassador Kirk, the United States Trade Representative, has made a very excellent case in Geneva about what the U.S. position is. In essence, if we don't get more market access, there's not a lot of need to continue the negotiations. And he's holding firm. And I've told him I'm impressed with that. The administration's position there is right. Having said that, on other trade issues, we're still waiting on Colombia, Panama, South Korea to be put before the Congress to try to get them passed. They're already negotiated. All three are good for agriculture. So that agenda's been kind of left hanging. Maybe more importantly for the future is what are we going to do in future trade agreements and negotiations to try to open up more markets for agriculture. I think the jury's still out on that one. The biggest problem thus far, I think, with the present administration has been this propensity to regulate that we have seen coming mostly through EPA. Whether you're talking about water quality regulations in terms of putting on crop protectant chemicals, pesticides, where a nozzle of an applying a crop chemical anywhere on, near, or someplace it could get into water is considered a point source and needs to have a federal permit. Never mind that FIFRA, the label on the chemical, is already taken into account. Application, as long as it's applied properly, it should be legal. You have that whole issue. That's going to be in the courts. You have EPA moving forward with greenhouse gas regulation, and you know, contrary to what they keep saying about, well, we're only looking at big sources, and agriculture isn't going to be really impacted. If you look at the law itself, we think once they did the endangerment finding and do the tailpipe rule, then after that under the law, the statute, which we don't think they can ignore, 25,000 tons gets down to 250 or 100 tons, and all of a sudden, over 90% of Americans' livestock operations come under EPA greenhouse gas regulations. So we'll have to see how that plays out. You know, you have things like in the Chesapeake Bay where they're making a stronger push to supposedly clean up the Chesapeake Bay, and they're blaming agriculture for a lot of the runoff that goes into the Chesapeake Bay. So it's just this constant drumbeat of figuring out more ways to regulate agriculture and not necessarily better ways to regulate agriculture. I think that has us concerned. Come back here.
The Obama administration is engaging in negotiations over the reinsurance agreement for crop insurance. Do you have any views on how this has gone so far, or how you would what direction you would urge them to go?
Well, with respect to the renegotiation on the standard reinsurance agreement, they're really only into round one, I guess, is the way I would characterize it. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. The companies have weighed in. I think, if I remember correctly, the deadline, I think, for the first round of comments was like the 15th of January or something like that. So this is sort of the first round. We're concerned, really, from an agricultural perspective, about two things, and that's access to good crop insurance products, and access can be determined in terms of how you structure the reimbursements to the companies in terms of what resources they have to reach out, if you will, to farmers and ranchers to provide the analysis of the of what crop insurance product is best to assist producers in deciding that. You know, that's an issue. And then cost, direct cost to producers, you know, what the degree to which the government subsidized the insurance policy or not. So that's a work in progress. We're concerned about the initial proposal because it looks like it will actually reduce access by reducing companies that are willing to participate or sign on to a standard reinsurance agreement. But it's a little early to tell. We're going to just try to be sure that at the end of the day, crop producers continue to have access to affordable and, you know, kind of comprehensive crop insurance products that meet their needs.
You're in a situation now where you have no estate tax, but you have no stepped-up basis as well. What should happen right now with when it comes to Congress dealing with the estate tax?
You're asking me what should happen? We ought to, you know, totally repeal the estate tax is what we ought to do. what is going to happen, I think, is still an open question. We are, as you've indicated, in a situation this year where the estate tax is eliminated, but you're really into carryover basis, which what that means is if you inherit property, you have to sell it at whatever the previous basis was and then pay the capital gains tax on it, which is 15% now, is going to 20% without change after the end of the year. So elimination sounds good from that standpoint. If it was permanent, we'd probably buy into total elimination. But that's not what the law says. The law says that in 2011, the current law sunsets, and you go back to a $1 million per person exemption and a 55% tax rate. We think that's onerous for agriculture. We are going to be working on a couple fronts, one to expand the provisions that existed in 2009, try to get that $3.5 million per person up to at least five, try to get the tax rate reduced from 45% to 35%, and maybe more importantly, maintain the stepped up basis and hopefully get an inflation adjustment in that exemption. I mean, that's kind of our wish list. And the last thing is to try to get some certainty. You know, people shouldn't have to go back into their accountants and their attorneys every year to try to figure out what's our new estate plan given on this changing this law changing is occurring right now. We need some permanency, some consistency. So we're looking for a long-term solution. I'm not sure how that's going to play out yet, to be honest.
Caring for the environment is a mission of the American Farm Bureau. Clearly, you don't support cap and trade legislation, but is there climate legislation you would support, and what would that look like?
Yeah, we have. In fact, I've testified to it. There are a lot of people that say the only thing you can have is a carbon tax or a mandatory cap and trade program. We disagree. We disagree with that. We think we can move forward with a renewable electricity standard, more incentives for solar and wind energy. You know, voluntary, either tax-based incentives or subsidy-based incentives, continue with the renewable fuel standard, create more supplies of natural gas to displace some of the electricity generation done by coal, research and development of carbon capture and storage to be sure we're able to use these vast coal reserves we have in this country in a way that keeps the carbon from being emitted in the atmosphere. And then, you know, sort of a Manhattan Project, if you will, for nuclear power. You know, that's definitely low carbon energy. And, you know, the Waxman-Markey bill actually anticipates a massive development of nuclear power, but there are no provisions in the bill to actually make that happen. And so that's kind of the missing link. But all of those things could be done, put in place through government policy at a much lower cost to the economy, and in a manner that wouldn't downsize American agriculture. And so we think that's a much better approach.
The Deficit Task Force is looking at a recommendation of trying to balance the budget by 2019, but what is the political willingness there to do something like that unless we start seeing major shifts here in terms of the elections coming up?
Well, that's a very good question. Political willingness or lack thereof is what has gotten us into the position that we're in now. We have had a long history of, spending more than we're taking in now, and it's only accelerating. And there is a day of reckoning. Farmers know you can't keep spending more than you bring in. And political willingness will occur when the voters of this country believe that it's a bad idea for us to be a major debtor nation and have to depend on other countries to finance our debt. And when that occurs, I don't know. But the first component of helping that occur is education. There needs to be an understanding of, what the path we're headed down now, what that's going to mean to the value of the dollar, interest rates, ultimately inflation, and are other countries going to be continue to be willing to finance this huge and increasing national debt we have? So it's not going to be easy, but Congress will change if the voters decide that this is an important issue, and we'll see when that happens.
Renewable fuel standard a little while ago. Just a few comments, if you could, on biofuels and renewable fuels in general. Last year it was kind of a big issue in your resolutions with the high cost of grain, so kind of pitting the grain farmers against the livestock farmers, but you came out in favor still of renewable fuels. We've had issues during the last year about indirect land use, that concern, trying to get EPA to increase the to ethanol blended into gasoline to 15%. We're still waiting for RFS2 regulations to come out. So just a few comments along those lines on how you feel about these things and what you think is going to come out of this convention as far as resolutions are concerned.
Well, we wish the EPA would have made a quicker and more positive decision. I mean, we are still waiting to find out if we can get the blend rate up. Just in general, continuing to promote the use of renewable fuels is good for this country. The feed versus food versus fuel issue, all of those that talked about how our ethanol policy was affecting the cost of food, you just don't hear much from them anymore since food prices have come down. It's kind of amazing. The livestock producers were hit with higher feed cost. I am one. I understand how that works. But our position all along has been if you provide demand, our producers in this country, and they've been good at it throughout this country's history, will produce for whatever demand is there. So we want to continue to create greater demand. But at the same time, in the case of renewable fuels, you're actually looking at something that reduces our dependence on foreign sources of energy. And, I know there's a huge and this indirect land use issue we think is pretty much phony baloney. There is no way that you're going to convince me that our policies here in the United States are going to affect what some small farmer does down in Brazil. Now, overall economics affects that. Overall world market prices affect that, but not what we do with our fuels policy here. So we'll have to see. I'm hoping that the EPA on the indirect land use question just would sort of abandon the idea of trying to figure out something for which there is no data or science to figure out in terms of international indirect land use. We're waiting. The bottom line is we're waiting for decisions. Getting back to biodiesel, where the whole industry there is waiting to see what happens with the credit there, and we're hoping that gets reinstated. So we're sort of in wait and see mode. But long term for this country, we're much better off growing and producing our own fuel than importing it from somewhere else.
The issues that have been challenging production agriculture just seem to be hanging around for years. We talk about them every year, and they're just increasing. How can you stay optimistic that farmers can get through this and stay in business?
Well, agriculture has had a lot of challenges. On the other hand, when you go back and read some historical documents, even of this organization and the issues that came to the forefront, we've always had challenges. That's nothing new. Some of them are different, some of them are a little more complex than in the past, and we are dealing with a society that has less and less understanding of modern production agriculture, so that dynamic is new. I'm still optimistic. People have to eat. The demand for food will continue to be there. The thing I'm mostly optimistic about is when I go to one of our large conferences where we have 800 to 1,000 young farmers and ranchers that are beginning their agricultural careers. Oh, they're not doing it like me. They're not doing it like, you know, their fathers or their grandfathers. They have brand new ideas. They're looking at niche markets, new ways of producing for market segments. I mean, it's just incredible, the energy and excitement that's there. So I'm optimistic about American agriculture. Yes, we have challenges. That's why this organization exists. We would not exist if we didn't have challenges that we were trying to solve on behalf of America's farmers and ranchers. So no matter how much we talk about all the problems, I think there's still a bright future for American agriculture. I think I had one more, Tracy, is what you said. Looks like you just scared everybody off. Let's go back here.
There are more challenges now than there was 10 years ago when you first started as president? Or do you feel like, and over the 10 years, what do you feel like you're really proud of that you accomplished while you were president?
Well, to start with, in terms of number of challenges, when I came in, we had a host of challenges, some we still have, or the same ones that we had back then. We still had regulatory issues, environmental issues. We had renewable fuels. We were trying to get the ramped up off the ground. Trade issues were highly prevalent. I mean, it's kind of like deja vu all over again, really. And that's okay. The more experience we gain in these issues, the better off we are in handling them. In terms of what we've been able to accomplish, I think American Farm Bureau being recognized as a strong voice for agriculture. I mean, I am in a lot of forums and a lot of instances where I can be, you know, sitting back and not saying a whole lot, and finally someone says, well, you know, what does Farm Bureau think? And, you know, then I have the opportunity to talk about that. So I think the strength of the organization, the breadth of the organization and the influence we have, I think we've expanded that over the past 10 years, and I hope we can continue to expand it. Well, Tracy says that's all, folks. From what I understand, I'm available for individual interviews. You got to get through with Tracy to work those out, and that would be fine if you want to do that. Otherwise, enjoy the rest of the meeting, and thanks for being here.